children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep. Come, my children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep.
Hello, and welcome to the Enlightened Medicine Show with Dr. Valerie Olmsted, the holographic physician. And before we get into the meat of tonight's interview, let me first mention that the show is brought to you by Hydramay Skin Nutrition, and that's at hydramay.com, H-Y-D-R-A-M-E.com. They have organic, natural skin nutrition, different than a skin lotion. So it actually nourishes your skin. If you haven't tried it, please do give it a try. It's pretty awesome stuff. And it's all natural, which is really cool. It just soaks right in, non-greasy. Okay, so tonight's show is going to be a little bit different. I have my writing instructor on, Tom Bird, who is just a hoot. And you guys are going to love listening to him. And I'm going to give you a little bit more insight into writing as the extreme sport. And so welcome to the show, Tom.
Hey, thanks, Valerie. Nice to be here.
Yeah, and I got to tell the listeners, too, that you kind of went way out of your way for this show because you've been traveling all day and, you know, you're teaching and everything else in another state. So I know you're a little fatigued about that, and so am I because I've been cleaning house all day. So between the two of us,
yeah, I'm in Atlanta, Georgia right now, and I've had to drive to Phoenix today and then flew all the way here. And then actually, it took me longer to get to the hotel for me to fly across country. The limousine I had rented myself and a few other people, it was 2 hours late in showing up. So we finally got to the hotel, ate my first meal of the day, and now it's about 11 o'clock at night here in Atlanta. And I'm just glad to be here. And, you know, I think it's really cool that you're kind of switching gears, but not really in regards to the direction of your show, because your show is really based around healing. And you know, as you know from experiencing my most recent retreat, there's a lot of healing goes on when you're right. In fact, I really feel strongly that when a person writes a book, going about it in a natural way, that they are literally, that he or she is literally birthing themselves when they write their book. And really, I'm not the first person to believe that. I'm just one that yelled the loudest lately. You know, Aristotle said, to live a full and complete life, every human being needed to do three things: raise a child, build a home, and write a book. So he understood the significance. What he was speaking about, he understood the significance of this spiritual connection and the birthing process that transpires when an individual writes a book. And that's what my retreats are about. That's what my life is all about. That seems to be what my calling is. You know, Val, at the last retreat, I think we had like 31 people in there. And by the way, the name of the retreat is Write Your Book in 8 Days Retreat. And Valerie Rue's there. And I think we had 31. And everyone finished their book within 8 days. Most, such as yourself, finished it in way less than 8 days. Mm-hmm. And, you know, writing a book, if you feel like you've got one inside you, and according to a recent New York Times survey, it was written about 2 years ago in the Times, 81% of Americans feel they have a book inside them, which a lot of people find to be an amazing thing. But if you really think of the spirit, if you look at writing from the spiritual perspective and significance of it, everybody should write a book, and everyone that does have a book inside them knows it and feels it. Most feel unqualified to do it or write it, or feel unworthy to be heard. But I guess the way I look at things is that, in fact, the way I do look at things is life is a really big jigsaw puzzle, and each one of us is meant to leave something behind, our piece of the puzzle. And, you know, if you and I, Valerie, were putting together a jigsaw puzzle, it was 6 billion pieces. And yet, 5 pieces were missing after we put that huge, humongous jigsaw puzzle together. When anyone looked at that jigsaw puzzle, the first thing their eyes would go to is the 5 missing pieces. And I believe that writing is a way to not only birth oneself, In fact, my students oftentimes refer to me as a literary midwife, but to birth themselves, but to also birth what you're meant to leave behind. What bit of wisdom, enjoyment, humor, whatever it may be. And that's why I feel so many people are drawn to write books. In fact, and talking about the healing nature of writing, that's nothing new. It's nothing new. And it's been touched on in books by several people, Julia Cameron specifically, and Gabrielle Rico, both of which who wrote best-selling books on writing. So it's not a new thing to look at writing as a healing art form. I think that what I'm doing is just taking it to another level and allowing a person to completely birth themselves through the writing of a book. And one of the ministries I'm designing for myself around my writing is I'm presently in the process of opening up a not-for-profit organization that will take my techniques and my approach to writing into prisons. So individuals who are incarcerated can have the opportunity to write their books and rid themselves maybe of consciously a lot of their mistakes and their regrets and their guilts and their frustrations, but also at the same time to rebirth themselves through the process of writing a book. So I'm currently in the throes of doing that and taking what I teach on a broad universal level to prisons to specifically help people heal themselves as a result through writing. And,
well, geez, you've been dealing with students for a long time, so you're definitely ready for prisoners.
With these retreats I do, I kind of imprison people, as you know, just in pleasurable jails. But, I've been teaching now for 27 years. And to give your listeners a little background of where I came from, I come from a family that was very nurturing. And my parents, even though they were college educated, encouraged me to pursue not a job or a career, but encouraged me to pursue something I just loved doing, and just to do that, and the job and career would take care of itself, which is what I did. And from an early age on, I knew I was going to be an author, and that's what I really most wanted to do. And I thought, though, and this is an area my parents couldn't help me with because they hadn't graduated from college, I thought that if I went to college and got a college education, like so many of my friends, older friends and family members who are graduating from college and went on to good careers, I thought that I could go to college or a university, pick up a few degrees, and when I was done, I would be qualified to write books. Well, found out that definitely was not the case. In fact, I'm still not as good a writer now after 19 books than I was when I was 18. I'm still recovering from the experience. And so to make a long story short, I tried every orthodox method available to help me become the author and the published author I wanted to be. And quite frankly, nothing was working. And, the authors I talked to said, you just got to pay your dues. And it just didn't make sense to me that if I worked as hard as them, if not harder, if I was as committed as they, if I knew as much as they, why wouldn't I receive the same degree of success? So finally, after about 4.5 years of frustration, trying all these orthodox methods that supposedly were designed for writers to walk through and become the successes they wanted to be and them not working, I asked for some divine guidance. And I simply asked that I be shown how to write books in the most natural format possible and also how to get them published. And after I made that request, I had a vision, a divine intervention that came through that gave me a glimpse of what I should do. I put that into play. And when I did, I sold my first book 6 weeks later to the third largest publisher in the world, tripled my salary at the job that I had, quit the job, and became a writer on a full-time basis. I began teaching shortly afterward because I was receiving so many calls to my home from people who wanted to know how to emulate my success. And again, I sold my first book when I was 24. But I felt it was more effective and efficient if I just offered some classes that these people could take. So I began teaching at the University of Pittsburgh, where I was living at the time. And very quickly, word of the success of my students began to spread very quickly and rapidly and nationally. And Next thing I knew, I was getting offers from colleges and universities all across the country to come and offer my writing series at their schools. And so now, 27 years later, I've made 3,500 lecture appearances at over 100 different colleges and universities. And that's what I'm here in Atlanta to do. I'll be teaching here at Emory University before I move on to the University of Tennessee later in the week. And so I've worked directly with over 60,000 people, Val, in the last 27 years. And during that time, tens of thousands of my students have gone on to live their literary dreams, whether that's just writing a book or whether that is to get a book published or a combination of both. And so my techniques over the years have become known as the Tom Bird Method, which is kind of, it is the opposite of basically what is taught to us in colleges and universities, and it's taught to us at all levels of education. It's completely the opposite. You know, and if something's really completely wrong, there's a really good chance that you'll be completely right if you do the opposite thing. So my teaching has evolved in several different directions, and most recently it's evolved into the retreat that you and I were talking about at the top of the hour called the Write Your Book in 8 Days Retreat, which I know sounds outrageous, but if you look at this, look at the whole approach to the retreat just from a very logical basis, you'll find that it's not really outlandish. What's really outlandish is someone taking 15 or 20 years to write a book and not getting it published. My basic philosophy is, if you want to write, you want to write because there's a book stuck inside you. Now, our job as writers is not to create that book. No, no, no. Our job is to release that book. And, you know, those of you out there listening in who've had any experience with writing, whether it's formal or not so formal, you've noticed that when you've done your best writing, it's just poured out of you at a rapid pace, almost like a dam it broke. Well, that's that book that's been sitting in your consciousness, your subconscious, for so long, being given the opportunity to come out. And when it comes out, it just wants to come out as fast as it can. The reason it wants to come out as fast as it can is because the faster it comes out, the less cerebral intervention can get in the way. So what I do at these retreats, as you know, Val, is I create a very loving, birthing, unconditional, inspirational space. I help individuals get into what I refer to as the author within state, which is a direct connection with that book of theirs. And when they get in contact with that book and that book starts coming out, if there's anything in the way of the weight and the substance and the inspiration, the heart of that book coming out, all that junk, you know, all that afterbirth type of stuff comes flying out. And that's what happens in the first few hours that we're together. And after that, here comes the book. And it comes rolling out. Now, when a person is in that author within connected state, their average writing speed is 1,500 words an hour. At the last retreat, the average writing speed was over 2,000 words an hour. So let's say you write 2,000 words an hour, and you write 8 hours a day. Well, then you're writing 16,000 words a day. And the average length of an American adult book is 60,000 words. So, as you can see mathematically, it only takes you 4 days to write your book. Now, some of you out there listening may say, oh, well, no one writes a book in 4 days. Well, we just had 31 people at my last retreat do it. Jack Kerouac used to write a book in a day or day and a half. He just let it out. And you may think then, well, if you write a book that fast, it's probably going to be crap. Well, if we're talking about wine and the maturation of wine, yeah, if you let the wine gestate or sit around for only a day, it is going to suck. But when we're talking about writing, the faster you write, the better you write, because all books, all good books, have to be written with heart and feeling, which means they have to come from your right brain and your heart. And so when they come from there, they come out very, very fast. Very, very fast. And yes, there is room for revision after the book is written, but not beforehand. So I found out in my studies and my experience, which again has been extensive, I would say that 95% of the errors an author can make in the writing of their book are directly tied to inappropriate left brain intervention. So the way to counterbalance that inappropriate left brain intervention is to write so fast that your mind can't keep up with the speed, and as a result, you don't have the intervention, you just end up with the flow and the heart and the substance in the book. And so I help people get in that author within connected state, and for the first day, day and a half, you know, they need a substantial amount of help with that. Their confidence is low. But after about the first day, day and a half, people begin to become one with their books, and now all their cathartic junk that was standing in the way between them and their books has been removed, and they're actually enjoying the process. They're understanding it. They're deriving benefits from it immediately. Even though the book isn't done at that point, they're still deriving great, great benefits from it already. So usually from about a day, day and a half out, I don't have to do too much for them to get into the space they need to be in to write their books. Now, Valerie, you can probably attest to this. When you were completing your book, it was coming out in a slightly different direction than you anticipated, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really interesting because I went there thinking that I was writing one book. And by the way, I wrote 2.5 books in those 8 days.
Mm-hmm.
And so the one book that I thought I was going to write, I did write, and I finished it, and it came out completely different. Now, I knew that that was possible because my guidance had already told me, you can't write that book that way. It's going to be too scary, and we don't want to have negative things on the planet. And, of course, everybody said, oh, no, you should write it that way because it's really an interesting story. And my spirit guide said, no, it's too scary. What you need to do is write it in a lighter manner, in a way that's going to help people without scaring them to death. I said, okay. And so I rewrote the book, and it was just really beautiful the way that it came out because it brought the best of the experiences that I've been through and presented some pretty new concepts to people in a way that they can accept. So then what I noticed that was really amazing was as I got towards the end, I was getting really restless, and I knew it was the end. And you came over and you said, okay, how did you feel? And I said, And so you said, no, you know, write some more. And I said, okay. So I wrote some more. And then you came back over and you said, well, okay, now how do you feel? What are you writing about? And I said, oh, I'm just writing about how, you know, we're all connected and yada, yada, yada. And you said, how does it feel? And I said, yeah, I don't really care. And you said, all right, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, you know, that's really interesting because I had already been through what I consider to be my rebirthing process, you know, in that when I reached the end, I just burst into tears. You know, first I was absolutely elated because I knew it was done. And then I burst into tears and I was like, whoa, that was really weird. I didn't expect
that. Yeah, they're
that.
Like tears of joy, you know, that's
yeah.
almost like the book's relief crying through you.
Yeah.
You know what, and you used a word very consistently in your little explanation there that really is a telltale sign of what you and most people deal with. You kept, well, the book I thought I was going to write, I thought I was going to go in the direction of it, and you kept saying thought or think.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one thing I really look for when I'm speaking to someone to find out where they're really coming from. Because if they use thought or think a lot, that mm-hmm. means they're, at that present moment, they're being led by their mind.
Mm-hmm.
And when you write a book, you're not led by your mind, as you know, it's your heart. So it begins,
yeah.
Here's how I feel. I feel it's going in this direction. I feel that the book is on the right path. And mm-hmm. so what you were dealing with initially is, and this is typical just about everybody, they have a book in mind they think they're going to write. Now the problem is, the book comes from the heart, the right brain, whatever you want to call it, and that's a feeling state, a place of feeling and passion. And belief, it's not a thinking state. But when your left brain, when anyone's left brain attempts to justify what a book should be so it can feel safe around it, it oftentimes takes that book in a direction where it feels safe, not necessarily the direction in which the book is going. Does that make
mm-hmm.
sense?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, you know, I would say the group that you're in, no one in that group ended up writing the book they thought they would write at the beginning of the retreat. Now, some people wrote totally different books. That was rare. Most people's books changed somewhere between 5 and 30% in its depth or direction. And that's one of the problems we as writers run into. We allow our mind to lead us, and the mind's great for leading us to pay our taxes or to balance a budget or stop at stop signs, but it has no connection initially with the actual composition and release and writing of a book. It's good for revision, but for the release or expression of our book, it's not. So what we run into is that every person that thinks they want to write a book also thinks what they believe they're going to write is going to be correct. And it's not. Because when they connect with that author within self and their books start coming through, the books will come out differently than that what they were anticipating in their mind. So the writing of a book always becomes a revelation, using my method as well, too, because it's a purely spirit-connected state. It's not cerebral. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the cerebral side of ourselves, but it has its place, just like the creative self. And the cerebral side does not or should not control the expressionistic book as it comes out. It can add to it. It can help tighten it. It can help make it better through revision. But as far as the expression, that has to come from the book itself and in the manner that the book feels is appropriate for what its bigger purpose is really trying to say.
Well, it was interesting, too, because out of all those people that were in the retreat, so many of them were so shocked when they went back and read because, they, you know, as I talked to them, they said, I don't even know what I wrote. And they asked me if I knew, and I was like, well, you know, yeah, I wasn't really cognizant of how I was writing it, but I was pretty cognizant of what was coming through. But then, you know, I've done a lot of spiritual work, so I'm kind of conscious of all that anyway. But it was interesting because I watched everybody going, damn, this is good stuff. And they were genuinely shocked. And I just cracked up. That was one of the funniest things that I experienced at that retreat, was just watching the wonderment, the awe of these people really connecting, some for the first time, with that real deep spiritual aspect of self through the heart. That was great.
Yeah, and it was, when it comes out on paper like that, and then they go back and review it, they get to see their heart consciously in its full color for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, most people, when they write their books using my method, and there's a lot of doubt and worry, at least initially. And when they're done with the book, their mind gets a hold of the experience. Because anytime you stop the creative flow, and when you're done with the book, you stop the creative flow, the mind catches up. Then you start living through your mind again, and the mind automatically says, well, you know, it brings with it its old excuses. You know, Valerie, you wrote this book in like 3 days, and so it must really suck, because no one writes a book in 3 days. And quite frankly, Valerie, as your mind, I don't even know what you said. And, you know, every time you color outside our lines, Valerie, you kind of make a fool of yourself from our perspective. And so you get all these excuses and worries and doubts and concerns that catch up with you. But then, when that mind is actually introduced to the book and it sees how beautiful it is, the mind gets shocked. It's like, wow, this is really good. I'll be honest with you, Val, as your mind, I didn't think you had this in you. Did somebody else write this for you, Valerie? Because it's a lot better than we see you as potentially being. And so that initial shock turns into a pleasurable shock, where a person's first recognition of their true, fully released creative side is brilliant. It's like having a child that you haven't seen for 40 years, and when you see the child and he or she's blossomed into a beautiful adult, wow, is that cool, you know? And that's the same thing that happens with a book. It's really a great experience. And quite frankly, from my biased standpoint, I really feel we all should write books.
Oh, I totally agree. You know, everybody is a unique individual, and, you know, they have so many stories, and, you know, maybe they're the only person around or one of the few people that's gone through a particular thing in their life the way that they have. And so, you know, we're all supposed to be sharing this human experience with each other, you know, and as a conscious entity that resides, you know, within this universal consciousness, it's kind of our duty, really.
Well, yeah, you know, and it's kind of interesting, or kind of depressing, actually. You know, the standardized test scores in our country in regard to writing go down more every year.
Wow.
In fact, there was a movement, which I believe has been stopped just recently. There was a movement to eradicate the teaching of writing and English from the academic systems across the country.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, there was. And some well-known celebrities got automatically formed a coalition to try to stop that. I think they've been successful in delaying it. And the reason is because our government pours not hundreds of millions, but billions of dollars a year into educating teachers or re-educating them about how to teach writing. And what they're teaching, it just doesn't work. And the reason for that is the reason it doesn't work is because, you know, on an academic level, writing is taught from a purely intellectual standpoint, and writing is an expressionistic art form. So as a result, it's holistic, and it takes into consideration the physical, the mental, the spiritual, and the emotional. And if you only teach it from the intellectual point of view or the mental point of view, it's like having a flat tire that's inflated on one side, but it's flat on three others, you know, or having, you know, three flat tires on a car and one that's fully inflated. You're not going to go anywhere. And our academic community simply approaches teaching of writing atypically. It's completely the opposite of what they should do. And it's no one's specific fault, no one that just ever sat around long enough or listened well enough to study the art form to the level of people such as myself. And I really feel that we should reinstitute how writing is taught along the lines of what I've been sharing, I would suggest, and we integrate it into the school system, we make it fun, and one of the things that students are expected to do before they graduate from high school is write a book using the methods that I suggest. Now, through the writing of a book, a person births themselves, and that's an area that our country lags severely behind the rest of the world. So many of our youth have not matured comfortably to the point where they can avoid midlife crises or difficult learning experiences through making a lot of dumb mistakes. Mm-hmm. And when a person really knows who they are and they accept who they really are and realize what their message is, and that all can be acquired through the writing of a book, you know, then life changes a lot. It's, who was it, Maslow? The Hierarchy of Man? Remember that one, Val?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he believed that the key to life, living a successful life, was to be happy. And what he did is he studied individuals that were happy. And he wanted to see if there was any common denominators. And one common denominator he found amongst these individuals he thought to be happy was that in each case, each one of these individuals had a 2.5 to 4 year period of pure rebellion in their lives, which he accredited with them being able to find themselves. So during this period of time, they in their own ways went out to find out who they were, even though it went against what they've been taught or what they've been expected to do. So that's kind of like a midlife crisis that individuals have gone through to reach their happiness. I think we can be a lot more proactive about that. I think we can actually say, hey, we're going to give you some drills and some ways to find out who you really are. We're going to make this a mainframe of your education because, quite frankly, whatever we teach you academically won't work if you're in defiance against using it. So we're going to help you find out who you are, and then we're going to help you get there. We're going to design a curriculum around helping you get there. And the way we're going to help you find out who you are is we're going to offer you the opportunity to write your book so you can birth yourself at a safe age and know who you are before your lessons become way too expensive. And so I really
That's a great idea.
I think everyone should write a book. You know, and the folks at the retreat, they were rebirthing themselves, and, you know, they were elated with who they found and what they did, but there was some regret there, too. You know, a lot of people were saying, you know, I wish I would have done it 30 years ago. Where were you 40 years ago? Where were you 25 years ago? And, you know, if we're more proactive as a culture and birth who we truly are to the point where consciously, the mental side, consciously we embrace that, and then the mind and the heart work together, and we're unstoppable. And I believe writing a book is the key to that. I mean, there are other great art forms, there's no doubt, you know, singing and dancing and such, but, you know, I'm not sure if all those other art forms are as socially accessible as writing. I don't know anybody that when they've done writing the right way hasn't been enamored with or enjoyed or delighted by the experience. And I think it's we should build it in our curriculum at every level of teaching. I think that as early on as possible, we should allow students to scribble. And then we should be giving them words, allowing them to do what they want, paint the page with words, and then just encouraging what them in whatever comes out. And as they get older and they get into books, then we can help them use what they've learned in previous years, previous grades, to write their own books. And just somewhere in the first 12 years of their education, we want them to write a book. Maybe it's in third grade for some. Maybe it's in 10th grade for some. Maybe it's as a senior for others. But that's going to be part of their curriculum, as I see it. I think that would be a great thing. And there is a divine timing attached to this, and a person could be able to write their book when they feel it was ready to be born. So,
well, you know, there's another interesting thing, too, that you took people through besides just the writing. I mean, the writing is really important as an inward journey. But then, you know, the way that you took people through writing their query letter before they had a chance to get panicked about it, mm-hmm. and just walking them into the whole how to get it published thing, I mean, that did just as much for people as writing the book did.
Yeah,
and I think, you know, what stops a lot of people is they think, well, you know, I can't afford to do what I have to do in order to get it published, or, you know, who's going to listen to me? I haven't written a book before, and if it's not, you know, the most excellent book anybody's ever seen, I don't have a chance, and none of that is true. And
right.
that's one of the things that's very, very valuable about your retreat, because you help people, you give them all of the connections that they need to get this started. And, I mean, that whole process was really amazing, too.
Well, you know, that directly confronts, first of all, just for those of you who are just tuning in, a query letter to a writer or to an author is like a resume to a job seeker. A query letter is a one-page document that describes you and your book in a stylistic manner that is sent to literary agents, not to publishing houses, to literary agents. And it's sent to literary agents because literary agents are the go-between between authors and publishing houses. So to get a publisher interested in your book, you have to have a literary agent, so that's why the query letter goes out to them. And I think really the biggest thing that, on an emotional level, that new authors face is a lack of acceptance of their own brilliance. And so you can tell them, oh, boy, you're a great writer, but they don't really listen.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, they automatically believe that no one's going to want to hear what they have to say because they're not worthy or they're not talented enough, they're not a great writer. And those worries and doubts and concerns can get in a person's way and really shut you down. So, I want my students at my retreats to send out query letters to literary agents. As you know, each student sends a query letter out to upwards of 1,000 literary agents using a database I have. And just by using my system, they're going to get positive replies to the point where literary agents will write back and say, gee, I'd like to see some of your book. It sounds like a good idea. Send it to me when you're finished. And that automatically gets rid of those worries and doubts and concerns that have been holding them back to that point. Because if you don't do something like that, Val, you'll find mm-hmm. that people will write books, but they won't share them through publication. And as a result, they're not going to be that much better than they were going into the process. You know,
right.
I don't know if you're aware of this, Val, but, you know, the 31 people in the group we had over 500 agents, express interest in potentially representing the books that were written by the 31 students that week.
Wow.
So that type of acceptance ratio does several things. Number one, it takes the author to a higher degree of permanency with what they've learned. I want them to walk out of the retreat and continue to do what it is that they learned how to do. And success is the only thing that you can have that will cause you to be confident enough to keep doing something. So I want to give them that success early. Another thing that the query letter response to query letters help to do is it helps to start building market value. New authors don't have any market value because they're unknown commodities. So you have to design, you have to utilize a system that defines your market value in their eyes for them to give you the credit that you deserve to take you to the highest level to which you could go. So if you, like in your case, Valerie, if you had a dozen literary agents interested in your work, that's a lot. So if you say to the other 11, I say to each one of them, well, you're one of a dozen literary agents that have expressed interest in representing my work, they stand up and listen. They realize, wow, this girl must be good because there's so many people interested in her.
Gee, you know what? I need to capitalize on that.
Yeah, it's what we're trying to do is create market value. Market value. You know, Sharon, she had 78 positive replies to your query letter.
Wow, I had 42.
That's market value. See, that's market value. That's huge. If you tell any of those literary agents that 41 of their colleagues were also interested in representing your book, that in their eyes, they want to say, oh my God, this guy, girl's a hot property. And then when they start seeing you as a, they no longer see you as a new writer, they see you as a hot property. That's how they then market you. And then, so they take that momentum and they take it to publishing houses and they'll create the same type of competition to further extend your market value. And as a result, you're no longer seen as a first-time author. You're seen as a commodity and a valuable commodity and potentially a really hot commodity. And when they treat you that way, they give you more money. When they give you more money, they have to do a better job on getting your book published. Does that all make sense?
Mm-hmm.
That's why we do it. You know, in the 1 week we spend together, the 8 days, you know, I try to get as much done as we can so when the students leave, they're as complete as possible. I want them to learn to write a book. I want them to be familiar with the book inside them, whatever book it may be. I want them to finish a book or books, in your case. I want them to have literary interest in representing their material. I want a permanency. I want a life change. I want them to have camaraderie and feel like they've met their literary family, which that last group definitely felt. So when they go home, they're changed people, and they've changed into who they're meant to be. So it's a lot harder to go back to who they were before then. That's what turns me on, is the personal changes that take place and the students that attend my retreats. I mean, I love to see their books get done, but to be quite honest with you, that's child's play. I love to see them get positive replies to their query letter, but to quite frank, that's child's play too. We can do that in a heartbeat. But the biggest thing that really turns me on is the whole life changes they go through as a result of what they did together in those 8 days. That's what turns me on, man. That's the greatest thing.
And, you know, it was really interesting to watch the changes, too, that the people went through. Because when the group came in, some people were very gregarious and very, very, you know, relaxed and having fun and, you know, just willing to be open. Some people were extremely closed off and very aloof and probably scared and shaken in their boots. And then, you know, then there were some other people that were very businesslike, and it was just really interesting seeing that we all came to a point of appreciating each other by the end of the week. And yeah. I thought it took a little bit long, but then when you consider that, you know, you've got a lot of people that are from different backgrounds, I guess it was probably pretty short. But, you know, I'm used to Sedona. I'm used to like, hey, you know, first 5 minutes, you know, you got it all together. So it was just kind of interesting, you know, to see how some people reacted and to watch the mask coming off of them. And, you know, I've seen enough of that, you know, I've been through doing rebirthing on people and all that kind of stuff for years. So for me, it was really interesting to see that that was happening with something as simple as just engaging in the extreme sport of writing for 8 hours a day, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, it's the group was, they were able to appreciate each other because they finally appreciated themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you notice, there was no backbiting or jealousy or envy in that group at all. And the reason is because every person was happy with who they were. And not only did they get to know themselves, but they went beyond that. The group became one. And, you know, as different as people were, they appreciated each other. They really bonded together. They really loved each other. And on the last day of the retreat, I was anticipating we'd finish 3 or 4 hours early because everyone had done their books. But as you noticed, everybody hung around to the absolute last minute, so I threw them out of the room because of the fact that they just enjoyed being in each other's company so much. They just didn't want to leave. And everyone was so respectful and so honoring and so appreciative of each other that it was difficult for people to leave because they're not used to that, and maybe some of the situations they experience on a professional, personal level on their own.
Yeah, and that was, I think, one of the most valuable things to see from my standpoint, because I tend to study people and, you know, just see how they're doing, you know, within themselves, because I think it's important to really understand people. And in my particular profession, you know, I can help people better if I really understand how they tick. And so to watch all this kind of stuff happening, I mean, I walked in there, you know, as an individual person with my own agenda and everything else too. But that first day I was looking around and there were, quite frankly, some people there I didn't want anything to do with, you know.
Yeah.
And then by the end of the retreat, they had changed enough that I was willing to say, okay, here's some people that I can at least have a decent conversation with.
And were you changed enough?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really feel like I changed much, you know, within myself. But
I saw a much more expressionistic side. And, you know, I mean, for me, I look back on my life, and there were some situations that I was involved in as a very young man that I was enjoying and I was learning from, but I would say, but I don't understand how this one experience and all I'm learning here is going to fit into my life. I really don't know what I'm going to need this for. And, you know, I got my start in baseball, and I started in 1979. I was a publicist for the Pittsburgh Pirates. And in 1979, we won the World Series, and we did so in a very dramatic fashion. We were not the most talented team. We were probably about the fifth or sixth most talented team. But we were the best team. And we had a gentleman on that team by the name of Willie Stargell, who captured the heart of the nation just by being himself. And Willie was one of my best, if not my best friend. And I learned about team building from Willie. I learned how to treat individuals. Mm-hmm. I learned how to bring individuals together. I learned how to follow my gut in regard to bringing individuals together. And I learned how we're all on the same team. And sometimes we just need to recognize that. And that's something I bring to my retreats, which I'm so thankful to do, because the bondings that transpires between all these individuals at these retreats is something, in most cases, they've never experienced at that level before, and it's something they take with them. Whether they talk every day through the rest of their lives or never again, what they experience on that day and that time and those 8 days changes who they are and changes their viewpoints. And they see what's possible. They see how we can all be very loving and accepting of each other. And how the part of them that comes through that's so deeply expressive is not something that needs to be hidden. It's something that needs to be shared because it's the most valuable part of them. And it's a part of them that people actually end up loving the most. And they learn that in the retreats. And I think they take that back home with them. And I'm thankful for the lessons I've learned that about building teams and camaraderie and compassion and love.
And you do a great job at that, and that's what really impressed me, Tom, because to take a group like that of such divergent people and to have them come together in a week when everybody's kind of engaged in this solitary business most of the time, it was interesting to see that happen in a group that was doing something as left brain as writing.
Yeah.
You know, because we would normally consider that to be a business thing, you know, and you have to have your left brain, you know, precise cap on, you know, of how to do sentence structure and everything else. So that's what was so interesting about your retreat, because you took the metaphysical concepts that I'm familiar with and you put them into a setting that was kind of at right angles to it, you know, and it was just brilliant because it really brought people together, and it brought them to knowing their heart in a very quick, sneaky manner. And I'm sure that some of them had no idea what hit them, which I thought was really brilliant. I was cracking up and going, wow, that's really sneaky, Tom.
Yeah, well, I am a little sneaky. There's just some things that I would be frustrated in trying to explain to people because they've never been down that road before. Mm-hmm. So I just take them down that road, but I take them down in a vehicle they're comfortable in traveling in. Mm-hmm. And so they begin to open up very quickly. And to be quite frank, biggest part of my motivation in building good team and good camaraderie is because I know I can get a lot more out of individuals if there's a group behind them. The group energy will take the individuals farther than they are capable of going themselves, and much farther than I'm capable of taking them. So I utilize the group energy to help individuals go to places they've never been before. Now, the first day and a half of the retreat, because of all the changes and people are going through, and because all the fears they're getting rid of and all the familiarity they're trying to build, the first day and a half of the retreat, it's on me. It's my energy. I'm grounding that group. I'm holding the energy. But I know somewhere around that second day, it's going to start to turn. And I'm going to start to get a lot of that energy back. And because the group will start to bond and the individuals will start to grow. And then the more energy they give me, the more I can feed back to the group. And then finally, I can step out and the group's feeding itself. And those individuals grew so much more because of the individuals, because of the individual group energy, than they could have grown on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think that's
one of the assets I really focus on nurturing, because I can take people only to a certain level. They can only go to a certain level, but the power of that group can take people to places they've never been before and a lot further out than I have the ability to take them, and a lot further out than they have the ability to take themselves. So I really try to harness that group energy. And there were two individuals, only two, that took almost 8 days to write their books. And they didn't feel pressure, even on the eighth day when they were working on their books, because they felt the group behind them. And I remember my good friend Tom Pitts, when he finished his book, he just stood up in amazement. And, God, there was all of a sudden there's 15 people over there hugging him and shaking his hand and, you know, telling him how wonderful he is, because everybody was pulling for each other. And for the people that finished the books early, I mean, we had one girl finish her book in a day and a half. I got up and announced she finished her book, and that put a little gentle pressure on everybody, too, like, oh, my God, she finished her book. And then all of a sudden the next day, 11 people finished their book on the second day. You know, that puts some general pressure on people where they're like, I'm not going to be the only person here not to finish my book. So initially it kind of puts that pressure on them, you know. But, and then the support of the group takes over and makes the completion of the book a reality.
Yeah, it was really interesting. I think that anybody, even if they don't particularly have a great desire to write a book, but if they're just even curious, I think they owe it to themselves to take your retreat workshop, because I'll tell you, you know, it's such an interesting thing to go through, especially when you have no idea what you're going to write about and it just spits out. And
yeah,
so many people started
it. The main theme of this show and what you've been talking about the last 5 years on it, you know, you're talking about health and healing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if an individual has divine energy coming into them, which we all do, if you're not utilizing it, if you're not expressing it, if it's not moving in a direction, what happens is it kind of builds up in you. And when it builds up, it's like good fruit. You take some really good fruit and set it on a counter. If you mm-hmm. don't eat it quick enough, it starts to smell and rot and draw flies. That's mm-hmm. what happens to that inspiration. If that inspiration is coming into you and you're not using it, it causes disease, you know, dis-ease. It causes disease. And so I think it's really important to keep that divine inspirational energy moving through us, not only because it's there to be expressed into the world, but also so it cleanses us and heals us, and also so we don't get ill by resisting it. And I think that's very, very important.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, one of the major things I try to explain to people about creative energy is that each one of us is a creator, you know, where creator and destroyer both. And people are used to having the destruction part, but they're not used to the creation part unless they, you know, notice that they're artistic, you know, at the beginning. But all little children are artistic. You know, you don't find some little kid that's sitting there, you know, writing or, you know, just working on the computer. Little kids will naturally sing and paint and draw and sculpt and do things like that. And so this retreat...
And where does that little child go?
Yeah, exactly. What exactly happens to that? And
that is, little child's inside each one of us.
Yeah.
It doesn't go away. It gets buried. Sometimes it gets lost. But it's inside each one of us. And that little child is our heart and our soul and our divine connection. You know, if you talk to a young child before they've been turned into a left-brain idiot, you know, they have all types of divine inspirations, and they'll say things that are amazing. What's it say in the Bible from the mouths of a babe?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're amazing. And that's alive in all of us. And that doesn't mean we're going to play with blocks the rest of our life. But maybe we can play with bigger blocks and build buildings. We can play with words and build books. Maybe we can play with paints and paint. Maybe we can play with rocks and sculpt. But inside each one of us is that divine child artist.
Yeah.
And, you know, until you express that, until you become one with it, I don't know if any of us are living fully complete lives. And writing's one way to do it. I know I'm very biased in the direction of writing, but I think it's a divine art form. I really feel that it's an art form everybody should participate in. Because
I agree.
We all have the ability to do it.
Well, and the thing, too, is even if someone feels like they can't write, you know, like I told a couple people in class when they told me that they didn't feel that they were any good at sentence structure or spelling or anything like that, I said, you don't need to. You know, you can speak it into a microphone and hire somebody to write it for you. You know, I don't think that they should limit themselves in that manner when they have a story to tell.
Right, and James Joyce could write a book. Anybody can. You know, I mean, look at what he did with Ulysses. You talk about grammatical errors and punctuation. He didn't use any punctuation. You know, I mean, that just is a testament to the fact that punctuation, grammar, and spelling are nice. They can help, but they shouldn't be abused to the point where they hurt a person's voice. And really, I really feel that everyone should write a book. You know, for those that are listening out there, let me identify how you can find out more information on my retreat. You can go to my website, which is writeyourbookin8days.com. You'll find on there's an extensive amount of information on the retreat. You'll also find there's over 57 testimonials from students who took my last retreat, and those are very interesting. Especially the one from Angela Howard. Do you remember Angela?
Yes.
From Tennessee. I'll be seeing her on Friday when I go to Knoxville to teach. Angela, just when asked, how do you see the birthing of your book? You know, right after she finished writing her book, she said, "Well, I felt I just had the biggest bowel move of my life." And for anybody that would like to attend the retreat. Now, I have a tradition that I'm holding on to and I'll probably keep. I like to speak to everybody who is interested in potentially attending the retreat because I want to make sure the retreat is right for them and I want to make sure they're right for the retreat. Because quite frankly, Valerie, you know, I'm only good in helping those people who have a book inside them and who are somewhat, in one way or another, desperate to get it out there in the last trimester of their gestation period. Mm-hmm. And so I really like to talk to people and make sure that so we get to know each other, but also so I can verify that they're right for the retreat. And if anyone's interested in being considered for the retreat, just need to drop me an email at tombird, and that's B-I-R-D, tombird@tombird.com, tombird@tombird.com. Tell me, hey, I'm interested in being considered for the retreat, and I'd like to speak to you. And then I'll send you back some times and dates, and we can talk, and then we can connect and see if it would be a good match for you. And if it's not, I'll tell you that too. I don't turn away a lot of students, but about one out of every four, I suggest that they contact me in a year, maybe a year and a half, because I don't feel it's quite the right time for them. But if you're interested, and this is something that people have told you you should do, or you want to do, or something you just want to do because you just want to get it over with because you know there's a book inside you, just got to get it out, drop me an email. And I'll be happy to set aside some time to talk to you. I've met some great people doing this. And, you know, the next retreat I have coming up is October 17th through the 25th of October, 17th through the 25th of October in Sedona, Arizona. And we'll start at 4 o'clock and go to 9:30 on the 17th. And the other days we'll go to from 8 to 5:30 every day. You get your evenings free. And to enjoy Sedona, which is a true blessing on this planet. Both Valerie and I live in Sedona. I hold my retreats in Sedona because it is such an inspirational place. And I feel I can get 30 to 40% more out of my students in Sedona than I can any other locale.
Oh, yeah.
And it's also part of my modus operandi is get people away from their home environments and put them in a place where they have nothing else to do but write their books and enjoy themselves.
Yeah, and it really is an incredible experience, and I'm so grateful for it. And I'm attending again myself because I have more books to come out. And I'll tell you, you know, I don't give myself the time to write right now that I would like to. You know, there's other things that, you know, work and things like that that I have to do. So because I have so many things on my plate, I don't get to take the time that I would really like. And I'm working to change that now. But I've got to tell you, it really is cool just to sit down and to allow your life experiences and your inner author, your author within, to actually come out and play. And to really put something down that can help somebody in whatever you're talking about, you know, it can be any aspect of life at all. But it's just such an incredible feeling to actually accomplish that and to know that, you know, for whatever, even if it helps one person, it's worth it. And, you know, with the way the Internet is now, you can get it out there for free if you want to.
Oh, in hours. And, you know, I think it's this retreat's designed for three different types of people. It's designed for people who want to know how to write a book. It's designed for people who have written books but want to learn how to do it better and easier. And it's designed for people who have come to the retreat before and want to keep coming back because they can get their book done in a week and then they can take the next few months off and do what they want to do and then come back to the next retreat and do it again. So in your case, Valerie, it's, you know, the fact you're not writing a day is okay. I mean, that's what the retreats are for. Come and knock on a book or two in a week and take the next few months off and work on something else because you can always rely on the retreat to get the book done.
Exactly. It was just really an incredible experience. And listeners, if you go to Tom's website, and again, that's www.tombird.com. For the writing retreat, it's writeyourbookin8days.com with
right.
The number 8. If you go there, you're going to see some video testimonials from people, and mine's up there too. And it was just, I mean, I look like I'm like three sheets to the wind because I was, you know, at the end of engaging in the sport of extreme writing. And it was just really an amazing feeling to be done. And it, almost like a spiritual, well, it was a spiritual experience. It was really amazing. So if you're ready, please do give Tom a call. Check out the website. And you'll really love it if you do it. I guarantee it. And you'll find out some things about yourself that maybe you didn't know before.
Yeah.
So, Tom, thank you so much for coming on. And
my pleasure, Valerie.
Looking forward to the retreat myself. And listeners, thank you for tuning in. And, man, that hour went really fast.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me, Valerie.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you, Tom.
Take care.
Bye-bye. You too. Bye-bye. Okay, and our show has been brought to you by Hydramé Skin Nutrition. And again, that's www.hydramé.com. All natural, all organic skin nutrition. So please do give them a try if you haven't yet. And thank you for tuning in and listening. And really, if you would like to write a book, you owe it to yourself to check out Tom's Method. because the Tom Bird method is great. It works. It works even on people that are resistant. So you don't have to worry about whether it would work for you or not. I got to watch people go through it, and Tom is brilliant with what he does. Okay, so that's another show there. And thank you for tuning in. And as usual, until next week, be happy, be healthy, and be who you really are. Nighty-night.
The book Corporatism, which has been featured on the Alex Jones Show and which covers everything about the real force of social control called the New World Order. This group exists. It controls all the government's